You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome to the first episode of the Broadway Teachers Podcast. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, Pam. I can't believe we've been doing this for 21 years. Not the podcast, but the Broadway Teachers Workshop.
Exactly. And who are we going to listen to today?
Today, we are listening to a conversation we had a couple of years ago at the Broadway Teachers Workshop with Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, who I met several years ago when they were seniors at the University of Michigan. I was getting ready to direct Edges. It was going to be the first professional production of Edges. I don't know why I'm speaking about it in like the subjunctive tense, because it actually did happen. It happened at Capitol Rep, and it was great. And I knew it was the start of a major career. And when we joined them in conversation, their career was well on its way.
I know. I think it was so crazy that they were at the event that summer, and it was the same year that they had won the, you know, that La La Land had won the Academy Award, and that Dear Evan Hansen was such a runaway hit on Broadway. And I thought, oh my gosh, so much good fortune for the two of them, and so deserving. They're so talented, and they were just so generous with their time and their spirit at our event.
Absolutely. It was such a great conversation. I'm thrilled that we can kick off this amazing podcast series with them. Hopefully everyone who's listening will subscribe and treat themselves to a real fun season of behind the scenes glimpses.
Great. Well, let's take a listen.
The following was recorded live at the Broadway Teachers Workshop, an annual program that brings theater teachers together with the Broadway community for behind-the-scenes classes, workshops, intimate discussions, and Broadway shows in New York City and online. Learn more at www.broadwayteachinggroup.com.
Now, I have to say that it has been our great good fortune over the years that I've been able to introduce a lot of incredible Tony Award-winning artists here at this event. But it's very rare that I get to say, please join me in welcoming Tony Award-winning and Academy Award-winning songwriters, Justin Paul and Benj Pasek. So speaking of, I'd say quite a year. Would you fall into the heading of quite a year this year?
Sure, yeah. Yes.
I want to just
What would happen if we said no?
Yeah, really? And I think, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us where the two of you met and how you started working together.
Sure. So I kind of lost my voice a little bit.
We're both a little bit under the weather.
I'm going to make Justin talk more than me.
Oh, I was going to make you talk more.
Okay. But I have my tea. I feel like I'm, you know, ready for the big show. We met at college orientation at the University of Michigan, summer of 2000. Oh, Michigan? Woo! Go Blue?
Go Blue.
Okay. Yeah. I like you right there. We met and we kind of bonded because it was everybody came to this orientation, but only a few musical theater majors were in our direct group that were touring around campus. And we like immediately
Probably
were
a group
like
of 10 or 12.
Yeah. And we were immediately like, you like, you know, Ricky Ian Gordon and like, you know, Jason Robert Brown, like me too. And so we started geeking out together. And then we became fast friends. But what really solidified our friendship was that we, starting our freshman year, we had to be in ballet class together. And we were the two...
Why are you laughing?
We were the two worst dancers by far in our class. And the way that we could kind of make it through was that we would sort of hide behind each other in class and try not to be seen. And we didn't know like what the moves were, like the pas de chevals and the pas de chas and all of those things. And so we just remembered when to kind of leap into the air by like saying to each other, like, run a little bit, jump, and then just fly. You know, those were our sort of code words for each other.
Yeah. So we and we would we even found ways to like there was like an exit door in our ballet class, in our dance class.
Watch out for this, you know, for your kids. Yeah, this was a high level technique.
Yeah. So we would like, because you know, we would do those across the floor. That was the most brutal part of dance class, which is across the floors, which is like, you know, you're in this room and you're like at this corner and it's like one at a time you go across the floor and do this thing. And that was the absolute horror show nightmare for us. So what was very convenient is, just like in this room, there was an exit door right on that side.
Sneaky,
and
sneaky.
So what we figured out how to do was, there was like maybe 20 or 25 people in the class, enough that no one would see you if you went out the exit door, came back in through the front doors, which were over there, ended up on the other side of the floor.
Big finish.
And then you're like, here I am. And like the teacher's just watching the other students go across. So like, then you, and like, she'd like look and be like, you could tell she was being like, I don't think I went, I saw them, but like, they're there, so I guess they did, like, good job, guys. We perfected a lot of these techniques, and that's how we, you know, bonded and became friends.
You guys were there, though, you started as performance musical theater, BFA.
Yeah, BFA musical theater performance. We were there to be Broadway actors, to sing and dance. A lot of our actually bonding comes out of like other failure. Our sophomore year of college. We were doing spring semester of our sophomore year, and we were supposed to be in the school show, and it was City of Angels, and we were really excited. And I think we both had it in our heads that a lot of the seniors don't do the spring semester show because they're all focused on like showcase and moving to New York and, you know, all that big time kind of stuff, getting agents, getting landlines, phone numbers in New York, like, which are useless. So we were like, you know what, it's basically the juniors and then us. And so there's a good chance that we'll get, you know, decent roles in this show. And like, it's not for dancers, it's for more singer actors. And that's what we think we are. That's what we thought we were.
We had already established that we were definitely not going to be triple threats, you know? So we were like, we're going to go for like a solid double threat situation. It was really going to be cemented at City of Angels.
Right. It was a perfect non-dancer show. There's like hardly any dancing whatsoever. It's all about the voice and whatever. So like, this is going to be our moment. And we auditioned for the show and we were cast. We both got cast. So that was good.
I was cast as the man with camera. Justin was cast as Harlan Yamato, the Asian backup dancer / coroner. yeah. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are used to giving this speech, but it was the first day of rehearsal and the director looks at all of us and he's like...
You know this speech.
You guys know this because you give it all the time. He's like, you know, this is an ensemble show. And
it's absolutely not an ensemble show.
And he goes...
If you know City of Angels, it is not an ensemble show.
It's not.
There's like two party scenes and like you're like... trying to give bits to people just to give them something.
And he's like, every part in City of Angels is necessary.
Yeah.
And every part in City of Angels matters. And then he looks right at me and he goes, even the man with camera. Which is the moment you realize that you really don't need to be in this musical at all for it to tell the story.
Sort of that was where we were. We were sort of like, okay, well, we, you know, maybe this is not what we're supposed to do, or like our version of ourselves is not aligning with what the rest of the world seems to be seeing.
And you're a freshman at this point?
We were sophomores now.
Okay.
Yeah, so a little more humiliating.
Yeah. And we had spent some time in practice rooms at school, just kind of messing around, like playing music and we had started writing some songs, not really for any purpose or reason or with any goal in mind, just to sort of do it, just because that was like an outlet. And then our sophomore year, when this whole City of Angels debacle went down, we sort of felt, it wasn't like as articulated as this at the time, but I think we were sort of feeling like, okay, you know, like our moms are flying out to Michigan to like come see us in the show. And like, what are they going to think? Like, what are they paying? Like, you know, all this money a year to, you know, for us to be doing. And like, we're not succeeding in the ways we thought we would. We sucked at ballet. We didn't get good roles in this non-dancer show.
We were at, like, we went from like triple threat dreams to like literally zero threats.
Yeah.
So we were not threatening to anyone.
Non-threatening. So I think we were, because we were feeling that way, we sort of decided to sort of channel some of our energy and our efforts into writing. And we decided to, you know, conceive this idea of writing a review, like a song cycle. It was basically songs that were all related to what we were going through at the time in our lives, or our friends, or, you know, how hard it is to be 19 years old, you know, at university, and, like, it's such a struggle, like, that kind of stuff. But it's very real and very dramatic to you at the time. So we wrote a bunch of songs, and then we had some other friends who were incredibly talented, who also had not gotten cast in roles or good roles or roles at all in City of Angels, but were very good. And so they were like all very bitter about it, and we were bitter about it. So we just were like, well, we'll all just be bitter and we'll do our own show. And so we put together a concert and did this first version of a show called Edges. And
you guys know about Edges? If you are familiar there?
I feel like, yeah, it's really old. We know. And so that was the first kind of thing that we did in public and, you know, for an audience. And that was the thing that we were like, we did that. And it was like, all right, I think this could be something that we do and that we do well. And maybe that's what we're supposed to be doing.
And was the response just, you know, did it floor you? It sounds like it kind of started really organically and you were just playing around and came up with these songs. And then clearly it struck a nerve with people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really more motivated out of us being really insecure that we didn't, like, have anything of worth, honestly. And when people then heard it, they were encouraging, but then we were like, okay, we have something. Like, how do we maximize the something that we have? So we decided we made our own, like, bus and truck non-equity tour up the East Coast of America to basically our parents' friends' cities where they lived. So we did, like, a production in Washington, D.C., where one of the cast members, Nick Blamire, lived. And, like, when we say production, it was, like, you know, them doing the show in, like, a black box theater,
microphones and stools, yeah.
Yeah, and then we did a production in Philadelphia that summer, where I'm from, a production in Connecticut, and one in New York City. And we just, like, sort of begged people to come and see it. And from that, some really nice people they gave us, I think, like $900, some donors to the University of Michigan Musical Theater Department to make a CD earlier that summer. So we would give away the CD. And then from that, it began to spread. And we were really surprised. It was also, it happened in 2005 when we wrote the show. So it was, I think, the perfect moment for people who were just beginning to use Facebook and YouTube to connect with other kids who were using Facebook and YouTube in the year that it sort of started, and it was really just a collegiate thing. So the song sort of began to spread through the internet and through those sort of platforms.
The interesting thing to me is I think you guys know that this group is largely comprised of theater educators from all over the world. So I want to go back like a little bit to your earlier educational influences, because what I find so fascinating is that that you both were talented enough to get in as actors to University of Michigan, not an easy school to get into.
And times were different then.
But that you had the ability, this ability to be writers as well. Was that something that was fostered earlier in your lives? I mean, I don't think many people just sit down and like, oh, let's write a song. Like, how did that come about?
I think for me, and we can delve more into it, and because I'd love to talk about that. Broad strokes, yeah, I think it was fostered just in the sense of, like, I think the number one for my upbringing in terms of theater education and arts education, the biggest thing for me was being given responsibility that I didn't quite deserve to have, but sort of rising to the occasion, and that's what I thought my teachers did so well. So I think that kind of thinking about how theater is put together beyond just being an actor, I think was always there. Like, there aren't that many programs in middle school or high school for doing things in theater other than acting. There are some, which is great, but there's certainly not to be a musical theater composer usually. There's usually not to be a casting director, to be, you know, maybe there is some tech works to an extent, but like specific, you know, costume design or lighting design, it's not always available. But I think still teachers encouraging students to sort of try those things on their own and being given the freedom to try that a little bit and then to be guided, that was always present for me. So I think knowing that there was theater outside of just performing was always in my mind. I played in the pit for shows. I conducted shows. I was on stage having that whole experience. I always went into it thinking there's more than just being an actor on stage. And so that's why it wasn't so weird to switch
to think about
writing.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think for me, I was really lucky that I had teachers that introduced material that was really inappropriate. I think that, my drama teacher, in the end of middle school or the beginning of high school, we were doing, Anna Deavere Smith plays, and, you know what I mean? And that's pretty badass, and you don't really know, how cool that is until you step away from it, and you're like, wow, that's really cool. Or she it ended up kind of controversial, and we ended up not doing it. But she tried to do a Susan Laurie Parks drama, and it was really, really cool. I had a teacher in middle school who one of the first songs that he played that was not sort of classical music. It was we had to analyze A Weekend in the Country. So just having these teachers that introduce this stuff to you before you're really ready, and it's, as Justin says, you sort of have to rise to the occasion, or it's sort of a couple of steps beyond where you're able to grasp. It makes you sort of hungrier to see what's out there, which I thought was really, really valuable and necessary.
Well, I do want to take a moment. I think he's here. I think we have Justin's middle school teacher, Ben Frimmer, here. Ben here?
Yeah.
In the back.
Hey.
Thank you very much. Ben,
I've never met this man. It's a plant. I feel like we'll just talk, and everyone will listen. No, but I feel like I grew up in a town that is thankfully really supports the arts and brings on tremendous teachers like Ben and our high school theater teacher as well. And I think that was a constant thing. Well, we were always being talked to as if we were professional actors, which I know is a little bit ridiculous in certain ways. Like, I had an extracurricular teacher who wasn't Ben, who was someone else who literally screamed at us one time, and I was like, that's probably a little bit too far. He's like, you're not being professionals. I was like, we're not professionals. But we were always being treated as if we were there to do some serious work. And that being the case, then you should do show up to do some serious work, and you take it very seriously, and you take a lot of pride in what you're creating. And again, the emphasis I know from Ben and from the high school program in our town as well was always finding ways to get students involved in making the show in whatever form that took. So it was so far beyond just I'm the director, I'll tell you what to do, I'll tell you where to go, I'll tell you what to make, and here's what it is. It's like, I'm the director. I'm here to guide you guys in this learning experience and guide you into learning how to do this yourselves. It's much more about you than it is about me. It's about you guys. In a perfect world, that director almost becomes invisible in a way that the actors are just making the show themselves, and the kids are feeling at least like they're making the show themselves. And so, you come in with that kind of thinking that's far beyond just, I'm an actor on a stage and I walk here and say this and do this, but it's sort of like I was part of making the show. I built the sets, I helped make the costumes, and you understand why they're made that way or why that's built for that reason. So it's a very comprehensive approach to it, and I think that's also why so many people I know from our theater program have gone on to do things in theater or in film or TV that's not just acting, because a lot of people, I think, get set in that that's what the road is, and there's so much more.
You grew up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So was your childhood, did you come to the city and see shows? Was that a part of your growing up?
Yeah, it was. I I'd say I came in several times a year with my family, seeing Broadway shows.
Ben, was the same for you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia has a lot of theater itself, but I remember maybe when I was 12 or 13, I started to come up and see Broadway shows more often.
So you guys were relatively close to the city, so I want to jump back to University of Michigan. So you do Edges, you get this great response. Are you now juniors, seniors? Where is that in your...
So this would be it was between...
End of sophomore year.
Yeah, sophomore year and junior year.
And so did you feel a real shift in terms of your focus, hey, we're going to write more?
Yeah, well, speaking to a group of teachers, it really was because of our teachers that I think that we were able to actually become songwriters. When they perceived that there was a shift in our interest, which, you know, I guess we were sort of vocal about, they really tailored the rest of our experience to helping us become writers. Even before we wrote the show, Edges, our sophomore year, everything that we learned about how to write a theatrical song was because we were in acting classes, and those acting classes were teaching us about how songs sort of make sense on stage. So, like, you know, you guys all know this, but, you know, like, what makes a song actable? Like, well, this was the first time that we had heard, like, oh, you should have someone that you're singing to in a song, or you should want something in a song, or there are objectives, or there are tactics, and all these things that, you know, are very basic. But, like, then, you know, we were able to say, well, if we're going to write songs, how do we stuff these songs with, you know, someone that we're talking to, or objectives, or tactics? So, you know, the next year, after we kind of said we want to be songwriters, or we want to explore this a little more, our teachers really, instead of sort of forcing us to be actors and commit to that thing that we had said that we were going to be at 18, they allowed us to kind of grow and change. And they designed classes specifically for us so that we could really begin to dig into that interest. You know, the head of the program, Brent Wagner, he would meet with me once a week, and he would play classic like songs pre-1960, and he would give me the sheet music and eliminate the lyric from it, and then I would have to match the music and try to write and see where it scanned and see where it hit and see where my rhymes, you know, went, and then I would compare it to the actual song, you know. So, and I know, Justin, you had a class that Jerry did for you too, right?
Yeah, I had a class that was like it was an independent study. I would literally went to my professor's house during the middle of the day every week to do. We would take old musical theater standards and American songbook standards, and like I just do new rearrangements of them and like sit down, and he'd say, here's the melody of the song and the chords, and like, you know, create your arrangement of it. So it wasn't composing exactly, but it was arranging and like having that sort of mentality of making that melody fit in, you know, in a new harmonic structure or a new rhythmic structure or whatever. So our teachers were really encouraging of us and you know, didn't feel, you know, threatened is the wrong word, but it didn't feel like, because we weren't following exactly the path that we had said we wanted to follow or that they might think we should follow, they didn't feel like, oh, well, then you're not doing this right. You have to stay on the path, and you came here to be an actor, so be an actor. It was really, they embraced the sort of different thing that we had an aptitude for.
That's amazing. So you graduated, and what was the plan? Was there a plan?
Well, I'll say, like, before we even graduated, we spent, over that summer, we spent time in New York City between, I guess, what would it be, junior and senior year. So we interned for a writer, Jeff Marks, who co-wrote Avenue Q, and that happened because we literally wrote like 30 emails to 30 people, and like no one wrote us back except for this one guy, but he happened to have just won a Tony Award, so it was really great. And then he let us sort of shadow him.
He went to Michigan.
Yeah, he went to Michigan. So it was part of like, you know, an alum connection. But we got to see how Avenue Q got put together for the Las Vegas production, which was really amazing. And from there, just living in New York City, we really began to see how the city worked and how, you know, what, you know, concert venues you should show up at, or who the other young people were who were pursuing this thing, and sort of got our feet wet a little bit. And then the next summer, I guess that was sophomore year, then our junior summer, we sort of did the same thing. So we had 2 years in a row where we got a little bit acclimated to New York. And then our senior year, there was a grant that you could apply to called called the Jonathan Larson Foundation grant, and you had to be a graduate of school to be eligible.
You couldn't be in school and apply for it.
So we were like, we're gonna graduate early and apply for this grant, and it's like, now looking back, we're like, it wasn't like enough money to justify like trying to graduate college early, but we were really excited about it.
We also, though, we had gotten, from doing a concert in the city, we had gotten through another Michigan connection a job writing a couple of songs for a show called Johnny and the Sprites, which John Tartaglia, as a Broadway actor, had a TV show on Disney Playhouse, which was like a morning Disney thing on the weekends, called Johnny and the Sprites. And it was all theater writers who wrote the songs. And, you know, at 21, we were like, this is the biggest deal in the world. And I remember thinking, like, how could I possibly be doing homework? Like, I have to be writing for Johnny and the Sprites. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, homework? So that was another reason that we were like, we have to apply for the grant and we have to do our work. You know, we're professionals now. So we crammed all of our final credits into the first semester of our senior year, and we moved to New York basically January of 2007.
Yeah, we ended up getting that grant, which was really a big deal for us. And the last thing that I'll say, which is still the Michigan connection, is that we ended up writing a song so we didn't participate in the showcase, but we wrote a song for the class, I guess a year before that, but it was the first time that our work had ever premiered in New York. So we got the experience, like, because our teachers kind of let this happen and helped us and tailored this, you know, closing song of the senior showcase, we got to have like a little bit of work premiere in New York too, which was a really big deal and a connection to the city.
Right.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, I want to jump forward a little bit to talk a little bit about Dear Evan Hansen, because this entire group is coming to see the show this week. Amazing. Which is great.
I hope you guys like
Whoa.
It.
Well, and I want to share, I wasn't sure I was going to share this, but a little personal story, which is about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I had to have a little dental surgery, nothing, you know, terrible, but I'm in the chair, and it was still heavy-duty stuff, and we're about to start, and I'm a little nervous, and the dentist is like, how about we play some music? And I said, yeah, okay, we can play some music. And he goes over to the assistant, and he goes, Marnie, he goes, go to YouTube and put Dear Evan Hansen. And I literally am like, you're freaking kidding me. I'm like in suburbia, like at a dentist office. And the guy had just seen the show with his family. And he's literally in my mouth going like, Dear Evan Hansen, like he's sort of singing half the song to me. But it really was funny because it struck, and you didn't know that, you know, I was in theater. And what really struck me is the reach of this show. And that has been, to me, and this is like a middle-aged guy. It wasn't even like a young kid who you'd, you know, think would be aware of it. So are you guys surprised by the reach of the show?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about in writing this, we kind of made a commitment that this was going to be the show that we were just going to write for ourselves and that no one had to like and no one probably would like. And that's like the irony of all is that it's the show that the most people relate to. But
isn't that the best?
It really is. I mean, I remember before we had no clue whether people would like the show or whether they would relate to it, especially before it went out of town in Washington, D.C. And we had this real moment where we were like, okay, well, if it goes to Washington and it's going to have its life there and that, you know, that's what we're writing it for, and that's the only thing we're going to write it for. And we like had no expectation beyond that it would do anything. So all of this has been very, very, very surprising to us.
Wow, I think there's something to that as a producer when it comes from the head down, like some guy has an idea, and let me get all these people together and write about my idea. It's sort of like a different experience as opposed to something that was truly a spark between the two of you and the book writer and what you guys came up with.
Yeah, you know, and we give so much credit to our producer, Stacey Mendich, for thinking of it that way and approaching us that way. She had been interested in producing more and had a career as a journalist, but was transitioning over to be a producer. And she had someone that she knew and respected put together like a mix of like young writers. She's always been obsessed with and interested in and wanting to support young writers, which is such a gift. And she took a liking to our songs and she wrote to us and was like, I jog around the what's it called? In the Central Park.
Jackie Onassis Reservoir.
The reservoir, right.
I even got the naming
rights
correctly.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's like, I jog around the reservoir every day, and I listen to your songs. I'd love to meet with you guys. And so we started meeting with her, and we were at lunch one day, and she was like, so tell me about everything that you're working on again. And we said, okay, well, we're working on A Christmas Story, the musical, because, you know, we found out that they were looking for new writers for it, and we pitched and demoed for it, and we got the job, and so we're working on that. And then, you know, we have Dogfight, which she ended up sort of commissioning at Lincoln Center. But we said, you know, Lincoln Center is interested in that project, so we're doing that. And we had some other things as well. James of the Giant Peach was doing it. And she was like, it sounds like everything you're doing is great, but it's all sort of because someone was like, you should do this, you should do this. We're like, yeah. I mean, we're 22 or whatever we were, 23.
23 or 4, yeah.
You know, that's how it works. You know, we're just, you know.
Who wants us? We'll
go. Yeah. We're hungry and we're excited and whatever. And she was like, well, is there anything that you have been wanting to write or have always thought about writing, but that no one has come to you and said, you should write this? Like, what's the thing that like, you're like, if I could just, like, do only what I wanted to do, I'd write this, but there's no impetus, so I'm not doing that right now. We were like, well, yeah, we have this weird idea for a show that we talked about in college, but and she's like, I want to do that. And we were like, well, let us tell you what it is. Yeah. And then we told her the story, and we told her the premise of a very early version of what Dear Evan Hansen would become. And I think she was probably like, oh, okay.
She had already committed
sort of said, I wanted to do it. She had already said she wanted to do it. Like, I'm sure she was like, how am I ever going to make this a musical? I have no idea what this is about. Like, a suicide and, like, a grieving community and a family and a, you know, a teen with social anxiety. So, but to her credit, that was her approach. It wasn't, we certainly had a lot of people and still do that come, and sometimes it works out. It's not completely to dog this process, but a lot of people come and say, okay, I've got this property, I've got this movie, I've got the rights to this book, I've got whatever, we want you guys to do it. And sometimes that works. It's like dating, it's like matchmaking. It's like, we got the property, we got the writers, we'll put them together, and hopefully it works out. And they're a right match for the material or whatever. And that works for sure to an extent, but, like, it takes, I think, a special, bold producer to say, I'm committed to your voice right. as writers, and I like what you guys do, and so I want to
support
develop
that.
The idea that you guys have that comes from you.
And when you had that conversation with her, what had been written about this? Anything? Or just like, this is just an idea?
I mean, I think we had written, had we written any songs or anything like that? I think we had written like 4 songs that weren't wedded to plot at all. But I guess we did share those with her.
Yeah.
But it was very, little. Very early.
They're so irrelevant to what the show is now.
Are they not in the score at this point?
Oh, no. They're okay. Not even like, they're like,
they're not
six
even
cut
in the
songs
cut
ago.
Songs like batch.
Got
they're
it.
Like the, they were like, just, they were burned in a fire or something.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to my next question, because I think people are often surprised. I used to do creative development for an organization, and I'd meet new writers, and I'd say, well, how long have you been working on this? And they're like, forever, like 6 months, you know? And I'm like, oh, 6 months. You know, how long was the development process for Dear Evan Hansen?
A long time.
Yes, right.
I mean, it was
since until we opened on Broadway, like, back, it was about 8 years, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, we sat down with Stacey, I want to say in 2009, for the first time. And then we began to search for playwrights, you know, book writers in 2010. And I remember we committed to Stephen Levinson at the end of 2010.
And how did you find him? What was that? How was that match made?
It came from a lot of, like, asking around and a couple
Stacey
of recommendations.
Stacey had writers, our producer, she had writers that she was interested in,
yeah.
that she wanted to suggest, and then we also were, we asked her, I mean, we knew some, we were still very young, but we knew some other writers our age and people that we were interested in, and then we asked other people that we trusted and who they liked.
We just ended up reading a lot of playwrights, and when we read Stephen Levinson's work, it felt like exactly the tone that we wanted for this show.
And when you met him, was it love match? Like, you're like, this is it?
Yeah.
Actually.
We loved him.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so then you guys worked together, and for those of you who don't know, you had an out-of-town tryout at Arena Stage in Washington, and then you came to Second Stage off-Broadway, mm-hmm. and then to Broadway. How much did it change between those 3 productions?
This show's undergone a lot of changes. I mean, we had, I want to say, between, like, what, 4 workshops and 2 readings or something before we ever got to Washington. And then we self-edited a lot. So like there were, I mean, massive changes before it even got to Washington. Then in Washington, during that process, it changed a great deal.
Well, even from the last workshop in New York until the very first production at Arena Stage.
There used to be an ensemble.
There was an ensemble in the show. There was like a singing, dancing ensemble. Like
man
other people.
Camera.
Yeah,
that got
cut. Every part in Dear Evan Hansen matters.
Yeah. Now they do. No, but that was, there was something else that we cut too, I thought. There were a few big, kind of big ticket items.
In the bedroom, down the hall.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we cut from that final workshop, which was supposed to be like, okay, let's just get everything, make sure everything's in a good place before we go into rehearsal in D.C. We left the workshop being like, everything's in a bad place. We have to like gut this.
Yeah.
And so we added two songs.
Before,
we cut 3 songs from it. We cut the ensemble. And then we added a few songs in D.C. Then we took out some songs from D.C. the second stage. We replaced like the opening number. We replaced the end of Act 1 number.
Which became You Will Be Found. That was a big, big moment.
Less changes from second stage to Broadway. That's because we had so many opportunities to work on the show leading up till then. So I'd say, you know, the show changed 15 to 20% moving from second stage to Broadway. But, you know, from workshop to arena, it was like 60%. And arena to second stage, like probably 40 or something,
that's,
you know, 30, 40.
Yeah.
That's great. And, God, I'm going to open this up for questions in 2 minutes, so I'm jumping around a little bit.
No,
but
no,
there's
please.
There. I'm going to move a little bit to La La Land, just because obviously folks are interested and it's so current and new. How did that come about? How did that gig fall in your lap?
Well, we started working with a manager maybe 3 years ago named Richard Kraft, and he's fantastic. And we didn't really get his vibe at first because he would just be like, "You're gonna do this project, like you're gonna like this. You have to do this thing." And we would always be like, we thought of him as like an emotional terrorist for a long time.
Yeah, my wife always referred to him as like a domestic terrorist. Yeah. She's like, she has like a list of like the people that like mess up our personal lives always, and like
he's
he was at the top.
But we didn't know.
She's like, it was like the director of something else, whatever, and Richard Kraft. He's like top of the list.
But because he would always be so enthusiastic.
Like, we're going on vacation. No, we're not.
But he was like, I met these, we'd just known him maybe for a month at that time, and he's based out of LA.
Yeah, he called us and he was like, "Guys, I just met you in LA. We're like, "What do you mean, Richard?" And he's like, "I met these two guys. They're friends in college, and they're filmmakers, and they're passionate, and they're just like you guys, but they live in L.A." We're like, okay, cool.
Cool, Richard.
He's like, "They're the same age as you," whatever. He's like, "They're doing a movie musical. It's at Lionsgate. It's happening, and you have to be part of it." He's like, "Here's the thing. One's a director, and the other one is a composer. So there's already a composer, so you guys would just write the lyrics." And we were like, "Well, you know, that's not really what we do. We write the score to shows. We write the music and the lyrics." And he's like, "I know, but this is what you're going to do for this." And we're like, "Okay, well, let's talk about this for a second." He's like, "We talked about it." It's like the way he is.
But by the way, this was also before, like, you know, it wasn't like Whiplash, Damien's movie before this. It hadn't come out yet. Like, they were just two guys to us. Like, they had no credits. We were just like, okay.
But he was like, they love the classic films. They love Umbrellas of Cherbourg. They love An American in Paris. Like, it's going to evoke those movies. It sounds amazing. You guys have to meet with them and you have to do this project, even though it's just lyrics. You just have to be part of it. I'm telling you, it's worth it to be part of this. And we were like, okay, we're still thinking he's crazy. We are supposed to get on a conference call with the guys, with Justin and Damien and the producers of the film. So we get on a conference call with them and just have a general kind of talk about approach to writing songs and influences and what kind of songs we love and musicals and all that kind of stuff. We have the call. He calls us and he's like, "Okay, I got the information. I got the scoop." We're like, "Okay." He's like, "They like you. They don't love you." We're like, "Okay." So we're like,
"Wow.
Well, you know, we did it." And he's like, "They're talking to a lot of people about this." And so we're like, "Well, of course, totally get it. And, you know, they either like us or they don't. And so we'll see how it shakes out." He's like, no. "We have to do more." We're like, "Okay." He's like, "Here's what's going to happen." This was Friday, like Friday night, like probably at like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m.
Yeah.
In New York. A few years ago, he's like, "Here's what's gonna happen. Monday, Sunday night, you're gonna write to them and you're gonna say, 'Hey guys, we happen to be in LA and would love to meet up with you guys tomorrow to just maybe grab a bite, maybe we could talk and stuff.'" We're like, "Okay,
but we don't happen to be
in
LA.
We're not in LA." He's like, well, let's talk about how that's going to happen. We're like, okay. He's like, you're going to go and you're going to book flights to LA and you're going to go whatever. We're like, okay, well, is the studio bringing us out? He's like, no. We're like, okay, well, are you saying we're just... He's like, yep, you're going to book flights to LA and you're going to fly there in 2 days. And then Sunday night, you're going to write him and say, we're in LA, guys. Like, we just happen to be here and we'd love to take you guys out for dinner and talk about the movie. We're like, okay. And I remember talking this over, like, with, like, my wife and, like, us talking over, being like, what, like, what, this guy's insane. Like, this, like... Are we really going to submit to terrorism here? Like, you can't negotiate with terrorists.
And your wife's like, we have dinner plans.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're like, I guess we're doing this. So we're like, do we press book? Press buy? We're like, yeah, let's do it. So we're like on the phone at the same time. We're like, okay, I just bought it. Like, click. You know? Yeah. And so we went out there and
they gave us a song to yeah, listen to. It was just like a piano demo of just a melody. And so he was also like, and not only are you going to meet there,
you're going to show up.
You're going to show up and you're going to have written a song to present to them to get this job.
Just a little pressure there.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, honestly, like now we were very happy that that happened. And so the song that we wrote on the plane to meet them is City of Stars.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, my last question before I open it up, just because I'm dying to know, most of us will not have the opportunity to be at the Oscars. What was it like? Any good Oscar stories?
Well, what do you think? I mean, it was an interesting night.
Oh, yeah.
What are you asking, Van?
I was actually looking for smaller stories,
perhaps.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty wild.
Yeah, you know, I would say, well, obviously, it was, you know, it was a really great night, and then it turned really weird, and you know, it was obviously, we're like, hey, well, we were part of history. That's always going to be cool. It was hard in the moment because it was tough for some of our colleagues that we love very much and had a sort of a really crappy moment. So that was... You know, that really shifted the dynamic of the night and the tone of the night. So we'll always remember it in a little bit of a...
little bittersweet. Sort of,
yeah, a little bittersweet way.
It feels like a Jewish wedding where you're like, it's happy, and then let's break this glass.
Exactly.
Let's remind ourselves of the sorrow, you know,
there is
of the
some
world.
Suffering, exactly. Yeah. But you know what? I would say one of the things that we loved, one of our most cherished memories from that time was, this is something that the Film Academy does that we then brought over and did... that we organized with the other people for the Tonys as well, is a couple of nights before the Oscars, the music branch of the Academy organizes a dinner that is just for nominees, just for music nominees. So no guests, no press, no anything. And it's like a couple of the governors from the music branch and then just the people. So it was like us and Lynn and Justin Timberlake and Jay Ralph and Nick Britell, like all these amazing musicians that we idolize and love and so respect. And it's just us sitting at dinner, the 12 of us sitting down. And that was really cool because obviously these things always become all about like press and, you know, flashing cameras and all this kind of stuff. And so it was really cool to sit and just talk about music
with people. Right, in a quiet place.
Yeah, in a quiet place. And like we all sat down and it was like sort of awkward but sort of great. And we're like, all right, we're gonna like eat this like halibut right now. And and Justin Timberlake is like, oh, I think we need to do a toast. And we're like, okay. He's like, guys, we're gonna have a toast. I just wanna say like I think we're all gonna be working together for a long time. And so
we're like, are we?
We're like, okay. he's like, we're going to be at these things for years to come. Like, this is our new family. And so whatever, we're like, this is the greatest person in the world. And so similarly, we did the same thing in the Tonys where a few nights before we got together, just the writers, book writers and composers of the nominated, the nominees. And
where'd you go?
We went to Un de Trois in Times Square. Times Square, of course. Again, that was the most fun because also people like get to whine about like the director didn't get this, or the producer messed this up, or like why didn't the cast get this, or like we want to like
you're a band of brothers.
Everyone gets to tell war stories of like how hard it was, but also like how amazing it was to get to have your thing finally do this. So that was definitely our favorite part, I think, of both those experiences. Is like because you don't get to interact. Writing is a very solitary. You know,
sure.
Job.
Endeavor.
And so you don't get to interact with people in the way that unless you're in production. So that was really special.
Oh, that's great. Well, I, for one, have to say that your speech was so lovely, the two of you. I mean, and it really, for anyone from the theater world or even the education world, I mean, it was a great moment to watch, and everybody was so proud and happy for your success.
You've been listening to the Broadway Teachers Podcast, recorded live at the Broadway Teachers Workshop, an annual program that brings theater teachers together with the Broadway community for behind-the-scenes classes, workshops, intimate discussions, and Broadway shows in New York City and online. Learn more at www.broadwayteachinggroup.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.